This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1. I'm David Martin Davies. Alzheimer's disease is a devastating and fatal condition with no known cure. Not only is Alzheimer's the sixth leading cause of death in the United States, but the prevalence of Alzheimer's has also increased by 55% in the U.S. between the years of 1999 and 2014. That's according to the CDC. And it's still a mystery as to what causes Alzheimer's and how it can be effectively treated and prevented. But here in San Antonio, work is underway to solve those mysteries, and we're talking about that this afternoon. And we do want to hear your questions and your comments about Alzheimer's research here in San Antonio and how it could be impacting you. And you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also tweet at us at TPRSource or email us at thesource@tpr.org. And you can text us at 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Now, we're joined this half hour by our guest. We're joined by Dr. Sudha Seshadri, the professor of neurology and founding director of the Glenn Biggs Institute for Alzheimer's and Neurodegenerative Diseases at UT Health San Antonio. And Dr. Seshadri, welcome back to The Source.
I'm delighted to be back. Thank you, David.
Also with us, Dr. Frank Gillian, the neurologist and professor in the School of Medicine at UT Health Rio Grande Valley. And Dr. Gillian, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much. Good to be with you.
Dr. Seshadri, there's a lot to talk about, always so much with you and your research and everything happening at the Glenn Biggs Institute. But first, I want to ask you about the people wondering how COVID has changed things with Alzheimer's. And what can you tell us?
Right. The COVID epidemic, of course, has had an enormous impact on Alzheimer's in multiple ways, just as it has on everything else in our life. It has made research into the disease harder because, of course, older people, people with Alzheimer's, are at greater risk. We wondered initially whether this was only because they may be less able to, say, mask and socially distance. But beyond that, it seems there may be some biological reasons making them more susceptible. There's also the concern that having COVID could result in changes in the brain. We know about long COVID symptoms. Whether these could then increase the future risk of diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's is a matter of big concern. And so the NIH is investing in studying this, and we are doing studies right here in South Texas to try and anticipate what might be the future impact of this current pandemic that has affected so many of us on future course of Alzheimer's.
All right. So, Dr. Seshadri, we heard frequently that one symptom of COVID is that you have a loss of smell. And that's not the fact that the virus is impacting your nose. That's a neurological condition?
That's exactly right, David. The virus enters through the nose, and then there is a connection between the top of the nose and the bottom of the brain called the cribriform plate. And the area of the brain called the olfactory bulb that's responsible for detecting and saying what type of smell it is, that's a very important part of the brain, if you think about it, because that's how animals know where food is. And this is a part of the brain that's closely connected to our memory portions, that is the hippocampal lobes. And it appears that the virus enters the olfactory bulb, whether it stays there a long time or whether it provokes reactions, inflammatory and immune reactions that then hurt the brain, is less well worked out, as well as what happens to the virus in other parts of the brain. But because it's so closely linked to the memory areas, the presence of this loss of smell or abnormal smell, which is such a common symptom, is particularly worrisome. And so we'll be studying the persistence of this, its relation with cognitive problems, both experienced and on testing, as well as with MRI changes in this olfactory lobe region, a bulb region, as well as other regions of the brain.
Dr. Frank Gilliam at the UT Health Rio Grande Valley. And the Rio Grande Valley is playing an important role in research in Alzheimer's and forms of dementia. Can you talk about that?
Yes. You know, as you mentioned in the introduction, Hispanic persons have, by epidemiological studies, higher rates of Alzheimer's disease. But the process of in the natural history of the disease may differ from non-Hispanics, and it may actually be Alzheimer's disease and cognitive decline may be slower in Hispanics. So I think just to understand Alzheimer's disease process overall, it's very helpful for us to understand the differences between different ethnic and racial groups. But even further for our importance is that it may be that certain types of dementias and especially Alzheimer's disease may respond to treatment differently between Hispanics and non-Hispanics. And it's very important for us as we're providing and optimizing care for Alzheimer's disease in South Texas and in regions of the United States that have higher populations of Hispanics, that we fully understand that.
And Dr. Gilliam, looking at Hispanics globally, south of Texas, Mexico, and into the Central America, South America, that would be something of great importance.
Of very great importance. And one of the studies that has been a collaboration between the UT San Antonio group and UTRGV has been a study of the genomics of brain structure and function. And there are now more than 2,000 Hispanics in South Texas enrolled in that study. And it looks like about 45% of Hispanic Americans in South Texas, their genome involves genes from Amerindian or Native American persons from within this region. And so, the understanding of how degenerative diseases like Alzheimer's might be influenced by different types of genomic makeup, it will be, very interesting as we get more information from different types of specific populations within Mexico and Central America, as you mentioned.
And Dr. Seseadri, that shows the importance of this research here, not just for the here, but also globally.
Absolutely. For instance, in the recently talked about medication called aducanumab, less than 3% of the people in those 2,000 people studied all over the world were Hispanic. And that's just not representative.
Exactly. So we coming back, we'll talk more about how the UT Health Science Center San Antonio and UT Rio Grande Valley were selected as a National Institute on Aging-Related Alzheimer's Disease Research and other factors regarding Alzheimer's and dementia. If you have a question or a comment, you can call in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org or tweet at us at 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're getting an update on the latest research into Alzheimer's and the role that San Antonio, South Texas is playing in this critical research and how it could have an impact not just in the United States, but globally, particularly in South America, Central America, Mexico, as we see that it presents itself differently in Hispanic populations. And so, Dr. Seseadri, if you could talk more about how Alzheimer's does present itself differently in Latinos.
Sure. So we know that Latinos have a higher prevalence of diseases like diabetes and obesity, partly for a number of reasons. And these can increase the number of people who have both Alzheimer type pathology, that is abnormal amyloid and tau in the brain, as well as these vascular injury to the brain, that is sometimes silent strokes or what is called white matter abnormalities in the brain. And having both of these things together can change the picture at when somebody presents, how somebody presents. Another fact is that there is a gene called apolipoprotein E that increases the risk of Alzheimer's. It's not something that you have to have Alzheimer's, nor is it an inevitable that you will have Alzheimer's if you have the gene. But it varies. The risk associated with having that gene varies whether you have it as a European person or you have it on an African or native genetic background. The risk attributable to that seems to be less if it is on an African or native ancestry background. That sounds like good news, but we know that overall the risk of clinical dementia is higher in Hispanics. So then if it's not this gene, what are the other genes, right? So there is multiple questions that need to be answered very specifically for this population. Even something as simple as how much is the, what is abnormal amount of amyloid in people of Hispanic ancestry and how frequent is it in this group has not been well studied. That's why there's now a study called New Ideas that is funding amyloid PET and tau PET imaging, which is a way of during life seeing how much amyloid and tau people in the brain have. And this New Ideas study particularly aims to recruit minoritized populations because we don't know enough about the disease in these groups.
To that point, I have a voicemail. Let's give it a listen.
My name is Ned Lee. My wife and I are in our 60s. We are not Latino, but my wife's father had Alzheimer's and my mother had dementia. Are there opportunities for San Antonio residents like us to participate in studies of the aging brain? Thank you.
And Dr. Sesadri?
It's an excellent question. My thanks. And exactly, there are many opportunities for people of all backgrounds, not just Hispanic, to participate in studies. We have ongoing studies at the Glenn Biggs Institute for Alzheimer's and at our partner locations in both Laredo as well as in the Valley. We have trials for people at risk. There's one study called AHEAD 345 where an agent that removes amyloid from the brain is being studied to see if it can prevent even the first symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. There are other studies of amyloid-reducing agents, tau-reducing agents, medications that act on these aging zombie cells that attack other cells, medications like rapamycin that may improve the blood supply to the brain. In short, there are many avenues that need to be discussed on a one-on-one basis. If the interested people go to the Glenn Biggs Institute website, which we are now transitioning to the South Texas Alzheimer Disease Research Center website, you will find more information on trials as well as a phone number where you can call or you can just indicate on that website that you'd be interested in more personalized information.
Dr. Frank Gilliam at UT Health Rio Grande Valley, we heard not just now that diabetes and obesity, these are conditions that have been called lifestyle-related diseases. Can we also, in some instances, think of Alzheimer's? Does that follow along lifestyle choices as well?
Yes, there's been emerging and growing evidence in recent years that overall health factors can influence cognitive decline in people with Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia. And for example, things like the Mediterranean diet or diets rich in olive oil or certain antioxidant influencing foods, exercise. And we don't really understand how exercise improves brain health, but it's more than just increasing blood flow. Chemicals released from muscles have been shown in animal models to improve neuronal function or brain function. Cognitive exercises or cognitive activity, learning new languages in later years, those kinds of challenges have been associated with slowing cognitive decline. So I think it's part of the package of treatment options that we will emphasize in slowing the progress of Alzheimer's disease and possibly even preventing onset in some older patients that'll be complementary to the newer pharmacologic agents.
Dr. Seshadri, I read the internet, I see newspaper articles all the time proclaiming a new breakthrough in Alzheimer's treatment or prevention. And it's hard to, I see them all the time, and then they disappear and they don't go anywhere. And I know we're doing a lot of research because this is a major problem that is going to cost a lot of money if it's not beaten. So what do I make of all this stuff that I'm reading?
Right. It has proved to be a vexing problem that over the last 20 years, there has not been a new FDA-approved medication, even aducanumab that recently received a very sort of conditional, what's called accelerated approval, based only on the fact that it reduces amyloid, but we don't have convincing proof that it improves cognition. And ultimately, that's what patients and families and physicians care about. Does it make their thinking better? And the jury is still out on that. Moreover, this medication is only usable in about 10% of the people with Alzheimer's. So there are many possible reasons why so many medications that seem to work in animal models, specifically mouse models, don't seem to work as well in humans. The disease in the mouse model is not a perfect replica of what happens in humans. People are different. So ultimately, we do need careful, thoughtful human trials. Unfortunately, one should not take, unvetted opinions offered on the internet. The internet is wonderful as a source, pointing us to possibilities, but it's not a good place in which to, have thoughtful discussions. And these are best had with one's own physician. There is more reliable information from both advocacy organizations like the Alzheimer's Association and the Texas Alzheimer's research centers, from your own physician, so those are the sort of sources that are more reliable. And at this stage, I would urge people to consider participating in clinical trials so that we arrive at an answer faster.
So if an individual is diagnosed with Alzheimer's, should they consider getting involved with a clinical trial, Dr. Seshadri?
Again, this is a very individual decision, but we critically depend on the generosity and altruism, as well as a little bit the optimism of people and families who opt to join trials. We know that overall people who participate in trials have a better course for their disease than those who don't. Some of this is because they are seen frequently, so any problems can be identified early. So even if you enter a trial and you're on the placebo, you seem to benefit compared to somebody who does not enter a trial. And of course, if you are on an agent and it proves to be useful, you go to the head of the line for getting that medication after the trial is concluded and before it becomes available to the more general public. So there are a number of benefits. It also means that the course of, you know, your patient's disease is precisely characterized, which can be helpful to the family to understand perhaps whether the children are at higher risk or not.
Dr. Frank Gilliam, this Alzheimer's Disease Research Center designation, does that come with money? So we're going to get more money to do research?
Certainly. You know, the NIH, fortunately, and the National Institute on Aging have increased funding in recent years, and it has accelerated research. And as Dr. Seshadri emphasized, with our need to better understand the process of Alzheimer's disease and degenerative diseases in Hispanics, there's been an opportunity for more research funding in South Texas and in the Valley. So it's definitely supporting us, and Dr. Gladys Maestre at our institution has sort of led the way to increased funding. And we're very excited about this opportunity.
Dr. Seshadri, it seemed like when it comes to funding from the government for things like disease research, coming up with cures for disease, that pie is limited. And when we have COVID, a pandemic, of course, a lot of that money is going to go into that area. So I guess it's important to come up with other ways to fund research, grants, foundations, generous support. Is that the future?
Absolutely. And I do want to emphasize that this $15 million or so that we are getting as part of this Alzheimer's disease recognition would not have been possible without the generous support, both philanthropic support as well as support from the state and the University of Texas, as well as, most importantly, support with enthusiasm and participation of all the residents of South Texas. One of the things that got us this recognition was the commitment from the institution and the people. We were able to show that people would come, would be seen, would participate in trials, would give their blood samples, would undergo imaging. And the other advantage besides the money is that now we have a priority in terms of access to the latest science and the latest trials, that we have partners. We speak several times a week with the 32 other centers to learn best practices and do science together. And we have a powerful voice because what our patients and families tell us, what we learn from them, is something that will be listened to because we are part of this group at the cutting edge of understanding not just the biology, but how to deliver the best care.
Dr. Sudha Seshadri, Professor of Neurology and Founding Director of the Glenn Biggs Institute for Alzheimer's and Neurodegenerative Diseases at UT Health San Antonio. It was really great talking to you again.
Likewise.
As we'll see you again in face-to-face soon, I hope. And Dr. Frank Gilliam, he's a neurologist and professor in the School of Medicine at UT Health, Rio Grande Valley. It was great having you, Dr. Gilliam, as well.
Thank you. My privilege.
When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about being a caregiver to a loved one who is suffering from dementia and what that personal story is like. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.